You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join me this week on Wednesday, that's today, later on at 8 p.m. to get in on the action. Locker Room. Change the way we talk sports. On today's show, we have the second part of my conversation with Aram Layden, host of the Locked On Marlins podcast. In segment one, you hear us talk a little bit more about Luis Guillorme from where we left off yesterday and the Mets defense. We also talk about the lack of DH in the National League, how that's kind of shaped the offseason for the Mets and the Marlins, and if it could necessitate a move by either of those teams midseason to improve their roster without a DH. Then in segment two, we talk about setting expectations for the Mets, whether it should be World Series or bust. And finally, in segment three, we spend some time talking about the 2015 Mets as I kind of give Aram a cautionary tale for the Marlins now, who are building on that similar strategy of going all in on young starting pitching. As we all know, that could come back to bite them. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Here is part two of my Division Day crossover with Aram Layden, host of Locked On Marlins. Yeah, there was the best stretch the Mets had last year was probably a 7-10 game stretch where Guillorme and Andrés Giménez were playing every day up the middle. And watching those guys at double play combination, it was really special. And I think Guillorme, I said this before, he's kind of a guy that I think it hurts him, the era that he's playing right now, because we're so focused on the home run. And I feel like if it was 20 years ago, he'd be one of those guys that you just plant at second base. You know, you get incredible defense. He'd probably bat second as the guy to kind of get your speedy leadoff hitter over. And you wouldn't even really worry about some of the things that we talk about now. Is he going to, you know, be able to drive in runs? He's going to have that power. I think he's just a good baseball player. And like you say, you talk about him being a player that helps a championship team. I think he helps you win a lot of games, even if you might not love what you see in the box score. I think there's a lot that he does that doesn't show up there that'll really help the Mets. And that's why, again, I am just number one on the Guillorme bandwagon right now. I'm really advocating for the Mets to play him as much as possible because I think he'll help him win a lot of games.
You remember that dude, Jack Wilson? I don't know what just made me think of him, but he was a defensive shortstop for Pittsburgh. Literally, like, the play that comes to mind is where he drags his back foot on second base and then turns the double play. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's a guy, when you mentioned the era thing, he would barely even crack a ball club today. And he had a really nice 12-year career. He even made an all-star appearance. And that's a defense-first guy. I think we're going to get to the point where those – Jack Wilson's, the Luis Guillormes, like, they're going to start to come back a little bit. I do believe that. Maybe that's a little bit of the traditionalist in me. I think I'm like a hybrid of the progressive baseball fan and traditionalist, but I think that everything kind of settles back to the middle again. And we've gotten so far to one way that the Luis Guillormes are going to come back because we're going to see the value in them, especially when you have a team like the Mets that doesn't really need any more offense. Kind of like I said, like, you're good. You don't need that much more. And it's not like Guillorme is hitting 220. I mean, this guy's now looking like somebody that can hit 280, 290, whether it'll be for more than 10, 15 home runs, that's the question. But I think at this point he's already showing now that he can hit too, like, and probably hit in the high 200s. If you believe in what you saw last year, if you believe in what you're seeing in spring training, I do, I'm sold on it. And at this point, I think he's earned himself an opportunity there to at least get 3 to 4 starts a week and just see how it goes. But that's going to be the question for the Mets. And I think they're going to be busy. I think once they start to figure those things out, it'll be interesting to see, does JD Davis get shipped out of town? Do some of these other guys get shipped out of town, and how do they go about it? But I think the Mets are positioned the best right now with the major league talent. But if the Mets do want to be buyers at the deadline, it seems like they're probably going to have to trade from their major league crop, right? Or at least from the 40-man roster, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, they've been really holding on to those top prospects. Obviously, you know, you're talking about Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, Francisco Alvarez, Ronnie Mauricio, Matt Allen. I mean, those are guys that they did not want to trade. That's why they were so happy with the Lindor trade, because they were able to give up a couple guys that were top prospects, but a little more fringe top prospects. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they try to make moves at the deadline. Maybe it is trading from some areas of depth. So if David Peterson looks really good throughout the season, but you get Syndergaard and Carrasco back, you know, maybe that's a piece that can be moved. Although I don't love the Mets trading more young starting pitching, but you know, if you're trying to win a championship, you got to make some moves. I am shocked that, honestly, I really thought JD Davis was going to get traded this offseason. I thought he was going to get traded last offseason. So I'm still sitting here kind of waiting for that shoe to drop. Maybe it doesn't, but that's certainly something that has been discussed. And I think the other thing that the Mets are kind of weighing is you have Pete Alonso and Dominic Smith. And I think they love both players so much that I don't see them moving either. And I think the expectation is the DH is going to come in and kind of solve that problem for them. But again, if you're in a race and you can make a move that puts you over the top, who knows what the Mets ultimately do?
Yeah, exactly. When the conversation starts getting to a point where you could potentially get a superstar starting pitcher, you know, lights out closer, and that might end up being what you have to do. But I think the JD Davis plus a prospect where you're not feeling it as much, you give up one prospect, that might be able to get you something depending on the team and whether why they would want JD Davis. But it could be a team with a surplus of bullpen arms or whatever. I just feel like that might be the major league guy that you end up parting with if you're the Mets. And it makes sense. I think the Marlins ultimately too, I think they're going to trade from one of Aguilar or Cooper, because it's not so much like the Alonso Smith situation where both of those guys are young. I mean, you look at Aguilar, he's at almost 30 years old, or is 30 years old, and Cooper's 29, I believe. He's actually 30 years old as well. So both of those guys being 30, once you get the DH, it's not really part of the timeline. I could see one of those guys being shipped out, but it's going to be interesting just to see how teams approach that deadline, because like we know the DH is going to probably come, but do you account for that? Do you trade away from your surplus? It's a bizarre situation. And I honestly thought it was laughable that baseball expected teams to make roster decisions without knowing what the situation was on the DH. The Marlins had to decide if they were tendering a contract to Jesus Aguilar. The deadline was coming up, and ultimately they tendered in the contract, taking a leap of faith that there will be a DH, and then there wasn't. I think that is a perfect example of why it's a joke that teams were expected to do that.
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, it seems so ridiculous when everyone kind of has a consensus that this is going to be a universal DH league at some point very soon. You get your first taste of it, to go back because it's a bargaining chip still makes no sense to me. But you're right, they compounded the problem by not making that declaration early. I mean, even now you'll still hear some people say, well, we don't know, maybe it's going to come in at the last second. And it's just crazy. Like if they were going to go no DH, they should have just said that day one of the off season, so everyone could plan accordingly. And I mean, we're talking about two teams where I think that really hurt them this off season, where they just didn't know what to do. And ultimately, I mean, now they kind of have imperfect rosters, but you know, the season's about to start and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I always try and think about it. Like there's just some baseball unique problems, and this is just one of them. Just imagine in football, if they're like, we don't know yet heading into the season, but you may not be able to line up three receivers. It might just be two. And so now you don't know, like, okay, well, do we keep our third expensive receiver or do we just cut him? Like that's just the craziest thing to me, because in any other sport, you literally can't even hold your laughter in when you make the analogy, but is that really that much different? Like, not really. And that's what's crazy about it. And that's why baseball is just, it can frustrate me sometimes where they just, it seems like they're just a little bit archaic with the decision-making, and we can go into Rob Manfred any day and that would end up taking up the whole podcast.
In just a minute, we'll pick up the conversation as me and Ron begin to talk about expectations for the Mets in 2021 and whether it should be World Series or bust. But this episode has been brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. This app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk to me, other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I will be hosting rooms for Locked On Mets once a week, so you can finally join in on this conversation that you listen to every day. This week with me out of town, we haven't talked a lot about breaking news with the Mets, so I look forward to any and all of you coming on to the Locker Room Math later at 8 p.m. tonight, where we can go through any of that type of stuff. And who knows, you might even hear yourself featured on the show tomorrow, the following day after we record these locker rooms. So go and download the free app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create your profile, link to your Twitter, join the MLB group for the latest league updates. Follow me at Finkelstein Ryan, the same as my Twitter handle, to be notified when my room goes live. I know you won't want to miss it. I'm planning to be live again tonight at 8. I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Mets, so I will see you there. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. We have been telling you about Built Bar for some time because it's the best tasting protein bar on the market. Built Bars come low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. And they taste amazing as all Built Bars come covered in 100% chocolate. But now it is time to find out which Built Bar is the best because it's Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is my personal favorite. Cookies and cream versus coconut almonds. So I'm telling you right now, Locked On Mets fans, go to BuiltBar.com or to Built_Bar on Twitter and vote on cookies and cream, okay? Today, it's not about voting for your favorite. It's about voting for cookies and cream, my favorite. So remember, use the promo code when you get to BuiltBar.com, LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast, hosted by Peter Bukowski. Locked On Today is a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm curious for Mets fans, is it World Series or bust this year? Is for the Braves, that's what the answer was. It was World Series or bust. For the Mets now, World Series or bust?
I think there's some fans that might say that. You know, Steve Cohen's introductory press conference, he says, I want to win a World Series in the next 3 to 5 years. And Mets fans hear that and they say, we want to win. Okay, so we're winning this year, right? Like, that's what you're telling us. We're going to win now. But I think that there's a rational Mets fan that knows what the team has been. And I'm definitely part of this camp where you just want to see them be perennial contenders. And now there's really no excuses why they can't be. They have the richest owner in the sport. They actually have, even though the you know, Brody years really hurt the farm system, I mean, that lower level has a lot of talent. So there is a bright future up and coming. Mm-hmm. And I would just like to see the Mets be consistent and, you know, just be in the conversation. I think if they miss the playoffs, that's a massive disappointment because there's been a lot that's happened this offseason. You want to see them get one of those wild cards. But, I mean, even if they don't win the division, I don't think it's a disappointment. I think the one thing that I would say is if you got in a wild card game with Jacob DeGrom on the mound and you lost, Mets fans would probably be disappointed.
Yeah, you got to be.
You know, if they can at least get past the wild card game and they go up against, you know, whatever team it is, the Braves, the Dodgers, and they lost, I don't think that anyone's going to look at this season and say, you know, the Mets, you know, didn't meet expectations.
Yeah, and that's the thing is it's a little bit of a situational thing, right? If you lose – in the first round and you ended up getting a really nice matchup and you lost to a subpar team playoff, you know, related wise, like it's not the Dodgers, the Padres or the Braves, then yeah, that's disappointing. But if you, the way I look at it, honestly, is, I mean, yeah, the Yankees are good. The White Sox could be pretty good. The World Series, in my opinion, is going to be won in the NLCS. I think that was the case quite obviously this past year. And I think it'll be the case again this year. And that's the reality of it. So just because you didn't get to the final series doesn't necessarily mean it was a disappointment. That's kind of what I was talking about with Dylan Short with the Braves, because if the Braves won, I think they beat the Rays too. So that's what the situation was. The World Series was kind of won in the NLCS. What's interesting with the Mets, though, is a team that just went all in, I find it kind of interesting, though, that their window is still kind of wide, in my opinion, because Jacob deGrom is not showing any signs of slowing down. In fact, he's speeding up. Then you have Syndergaard, who at the end of the day, he's still young. It's just whether he's able to stay healthy. When you look at the outfield and the infield, everybody's pretty much on the right side of 30. Conforto's still even on the right side of 30. Nimmo, young. I mean, you got Pete Alonso, who's young. Dom Smith is still young. Majority of these guys, Lindor even. I mean, he's a superstar, but he's got a lot more years left in his prime. Other than maybe James McCann, who still has a few more years, I think, of being solid behind the dish, it seems like the whole Mets team has a really wide window. And that's another reason why I think it doesn't have to be World Series or bust this year. That's what I thought was an interesting balance of some of the acquisitions they made, is I think it fit their timeline too. Getting a Lindor, he's going to be good for a while. If they went out and got somebody that was 33 years old, then that's a superstar, it'd be a little bit different, right? You're like, okay, let's push for it now. How do you feel about that? Because that's just kind of my perspective on it. I feel like the Mets are going to be good for a while. And for that reason, it takes a little bit of pressure off of this singular season. I don't know. That's just an outsider who roots for a losing franchise. So I don't know what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what would be really great is that the Mets were able to iron out extensions with Lindor and Conforto before the season starts, because I do think that would, in some sense, is kind of really show that clubhouse that they're going to be together. And it's not just a one-year push to try to win a World Series. Now, I think ultimately, whether it's now or at the end of the season, I believe those deals will eventually get done. But, you know, when you talk about kind of the youth of this team, you look at the opening day, you know, starting lineup, and if I'm not mistaken, I think everyone is between 25 and 28 besides James McCann, who's 30. So that's everyone just right in their prime. And, you know, if you can have a team that's built like that, that can stay together for the next 4 or 5 years, they're going to get a couple cracks at, you know, winning a World Series. And that's all Mets fans can ask for at this point.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what I was thinking, because it's just, that's got to be exciting. And yeah, that's what the Marlins, I think, are hoping to get to in their point too, is they have some of the veterans now, but some of those guys aren't really a part of the future, but they're really trying to build that core. I think they've done it pitching wise. You look 1 through 5 with the Marlins, Sandy Alcantara is just mid 20s still, Pablo Lopez, mid 20s, Sixto Sanchez, early 20s. And you got the same thing, Eliezer Hernandez, mid 20s, Trevor Rogers is closer to his early 20s. And then you got some really good pitching prospects in the wings with Max Meyer, Edward Cabrera, and a few others. So they've established that with the pitching. The offense has just been the struggle, is these offensive prospects have not panned out. Lewis Brinson has not panned out. Monte Harrison so far has struggled. Jesus Sanchez has not looked like the guy that they were hoping, but still he has plenty of time to figure it out. But, you know, that's what the Marlins, and I think more so with Brinson, they were really hoping that he would be a fixture on this team by now, and he's not. And now they're trying to figure out who those long-term offensive pieces are going to be, because the reality is after this year, it's a lot different than the Mets, where Marte, well, he'll be gone unless the Marlins decide to bring him back for another year. But it's 1 year contract for $12.5 million. That was the club option. Corey Dickerson's contract will be up. He'll be gone. Duvall has a mutual option that almost certainly won't be picked up unless he hits 40 jacks. And there, your infield's starting from scratch again. And now you're going to figure that out. You're hoping Bode is ready. You're hoping a few other prospects are ready. But that's what kind of scares me, is that if some of those prospects aren't ready, now you're scrambling to put together a veteran outfield again. And it's like, is it going to be good? That's what's tough, because right now I think the team, you can see that progression, but you can also see how things could blow up in their face a little bit on the offensive side of things. But I do think it is easier to build, and I'm curious what your take is on that. It is easier to build through free agency on the offensive side of things than like the pitching side of things, which the Marlins were in the hard way in the past.
In just a minute, we get to what I think might be the best part of this entire crossover, as we talk about the 2015 Mets and what it's like to build around young starting pitching as the Marlins try to do that right now. But if you're going to bet on a team this year to win the division, let's say the Mets, the fastest and easiest way to do that is to go to BetOnline. They have everything you need Football's over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. With real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine, BetOnline has you covered for all the new scores and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. That's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I will say, I mean, from my experiences over the last decade here, you know, the Mets kind of went through a similar route building around young starting pitching. And I'll tell you, it's a little bit of a dangerous game just because of the injuries. And so, you know, you knock on wood, you hope all those guys stay healthy, but that is the one thing to be concerned about. I mean, with the Mets, you know, they had that dream rotation, right? That went to the World Series.
It's really true.
And, you know, it was supposed to be eventually, because Zach Wheeler had Tommy John that year. They went to the World Series. Eventually, it was going to be DeGrom, Harvey, Wheeler, Mats, and Syndergaard. And I think they maybe only took a single turn of the rotation, like one or two times. It was, and then Harvey got like cut at that point, and that was kind of it. So it's crazy how that can blow up on you. I'm not trying to.
No, I mean, it's a good point. It's terrible. Marlins fans are like cringing right now. There's examples where it was worked out too, but no, it's a good point, because I think you look at the Marlins rotation right now and it's like, there's no way that this rotation won't be good for a long time. And odds are, you know, it will be good for a long time, but I'm sure Mets fans thought that they were well on their way to having the best rotation ever. And things went south quickly. I didn't even really think about that. I might need to take a moment here.
Sorry, but no,
it's true though. The injuries are tough. I think the arc of Matt Harvey was really tough. Syndergaard also being so injury prone, that sucks. And then at that point you had Matt's injury prone, and Wheeler just didn't really ever consistently get it going with the Mets until the end there. It was just a weird situation. And I hope that the Marlins won't have something like that going on. But that Mets team that made the World Series, pitching led the way for them, right? Like what was the mold of that team? Because the Royals mold is something that we'll probably never see again, which was just scrape for a couple runs and have the best bullpen you've ever seen in your life. Like that'll never happen again. Like that, just baseball can't do that. And that kind of team will never win. I wanted the Marlins to kind of go all in on that mold the last 2 years, just to try, because that's the only way right now to try and make the most of it is just build a super pen. And they ultimately just didn't allocate enough money there. And they made some more underrated acquisitions. What was that Mets mold that year? Like what would you say their approach to building that team was? It's crazy how long it's already been since that World Series. It feels like it was just a few years ago.
Yeah. I mean, Sandy Alderson realized midseason that, you know, the Mets were struggling that year. You might not remember. I mean, it was probably late June where it just was not working. There was a series against the Padres that was just awful, where Familia, there was like a rain game where Familia gave up a home run or after the rain delay and then went to extras. The Mets lost. And you thought this team was just the same old Mets team. And then Alderson just went all in and believed in that rotation. And he went out and, you know, first they promoted Conforto at the time. And he kind of brought them a jolt. He brought in veterans like Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson. And then, you know, ultimately after the team started going, there was the Flores. He was traded. He was not traded. Hit the home run.
Oh, the whole deal. That's when that was.
Yeah. He got traded for Carlos Gomez. And then they didn't like Gomez's medical. And then he was crying. The field because he thought he was traded. And then 2 days later, he hits a walk-off home run. And the Mets added Cespedes. And then Cespedes was, you know, the MVP of that second half. He was unbelievable. And so that really, it was just lightning in a bottle for that team. And then after that, you know, they kind of tried to continue to plug in veterans like Neil Walker, Asdrubal Cabrera. And, you know, 2016, they got to the playoffs, but it never quite worked again. I mean, Jay Bruce was an addition that they thought, you know, could do something for them. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you build around starting pitching and the starting pitching is healthy, you're going to be in a lot of games. And you can plug in the right couple of pieces, get enough offense and win. But yeah, that team, it's kind of crazy to look back on, because if you compare that team to the Mets roster now, the Mets roster now is so much more talented than that World Series team. I mean, they had Cespedes playing center field in the World Series.
Yeah.
And Flores was the shortstop. So
yeah, you
talk about defense, the defense up the middle. It's crazy they got that far, and they were winning, or they were leading in every game of the World Series. And I mean, I'll never forget the quick pitch game one, Jeurys Familia to Alex Gordon that he took and hit the home run and kind of deflated all the momentum the Mets had built up in the series prior. But yeah, that team was a really special team, but one that was always kind of held together by duct tape, and it kind of fell apart at the last minute there, and they lost in five games. So
yeah. And that's the interesting thing, is I'd like to almost go back and see what the Mets farm system looked like at the time, because the Marlins do just have so many outfielders in their system that I feel like just a few of them have to pan out. Like, there's so many high ceiling outfielders. While they might not be even top 100 guys, they have the capability to be. And it's just like, I could probably rattle off seven guys that have the potential to be top 100 guys if they play to their potential. It's Monte Harrison. You got Jesus Sanchez, Peyton Burdick. You got Cameron Meisner. All of these players that Griffin Conine, even, you know, who hit 22 home runs in 80 games. Like, there's so many players that just have these lofty ceilings, but the Marlins went the volatility route over the safe and consistent route, the higher floor. They went more volatility over the higher floor, and we'll see if it works out. But man, I would just love a Michael Conforto type of prospect where it's, you just know he's got a smooth, like Blade is that guy for the Marlins. I think that's a fair comp, honestly, too, is somewhat of Conforto, but I just don't know. We're going to see that volatile approach and see how it works. But so far, it really hasn't paid dividends. If you hit on a few of them, it works out. If not, then Marlins are going to have to do some evaluating. But I mean, the system's stacked, and we'll just see how that translates to the major league level. I think the Mets, though, what was interesting is a lot of the talent they had, a lot of those big name guys, it was players they cultivated themselves.
Yeah, no, definitely. At the time, I mean, you know, they had the big trade, the R.A. Dickey trade that got them, you know, Syndergaard and d'Arnaud. And, you know, they made a couple of moves. You know, Zach Wheeler was another trade for Beltran. But, you know, when a guy still spends a couple of years in your farm system, it still kind of feels that they're homegrown. And, yeah, a lot of that talent, you know, was cultivated by Sandy Alderson. And some of it's still there. I mean, you look at the team Brody Van Wagenen inherited, and, I mean, it was all Alderson first-round picks. I got to get out of here. So, thanks so much. Why don't you tell the Mets fans where they can find your work?
Yeah, you can follow me at RMLayton8 on Twitter, where I'll be keeping up. You can keep up with all the prospect stuff. I'll be doing some more on the Mets farm system. Just talked a lot about Francisco Alvarez on the latest Locked On MLB Prospects podcast. He's well inside of my top five catching prospects in baseball. So I'm always doing stuff on the Mets farm system and farm systems across baseball. So you can keep up with it there. And I am a big PCA fan as well. So I'm excited to watch him play this year. And you'll hear a lot of my analysis on him if you come check out the show.
Awesome. And for the Marlins fans, if you're interested in anything going on with the Mets, you can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. And obviously you can find the show wherever you get your podcasts. Today is finally the day. The Locked On MLB podcast begins its division preview series. It's all on the Locked On MLB podcast feed right now. Every episode from now until the 31st features in-depth looks at each team in every division. So follow Locked On MLB on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.